The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
It is the 9 till noon show and it's Michaela Clark in this morning for Grey Cues. You can get in touch with us today to raise an issue if you wish or join in any of our conversations by calling us on 074 91 25000, or you can text or WhatsApp 086 60 25000, and you can also email comments at highlandradio.com. We've all the usual lineup coming for this Monday, including Brendan Devaney. He'll be talking about what's coming up on the DL debate and all the GAA action from over the weekend, and we'll have Monday Focus as well coming up after 11. But we've loads to come in between that, and just to let you know, our online stream isn't working at the minute, but we are working to resolve that issue. So once we're back up and running, we'll let you know about that. First, though, we're going to have a look at the papers. The front page of the Donegal News today: community in shock after death of popular fisherman. Killybegs fisherman Kevin McCluskey has been remembered as a true gentleman following his tragic passing, which shocked the community over the weekend. Mr. McCluskey's body was recovered off the coast of Donegal on Saturday evening, shortly before 6 p.m. He's believed to have fallen overboard while fishing in the area. The search for the well-known skipper began on Thursday evening after a member of the public alerted the Irish Coast Guard Coordination Centre to a fishing vessel stranded in County Sligo. The multi-agency search involving Malinhead Coast Guard, the Sligo-based Coast Guard helicopter, or 118, the Killybegs Coast Guard unit, or Nalai lifeboats from Bundoran, Armagh, Ballyglass and Sligo, as well as a number of local fishing vessels focused in an area in County Sligo extending into Donegal Bay. So our thoughts and prayers are very much with the friends, family and of course the fellow fishermen in the industry following the death of Mr. McCluskey. The Derry News now. Soldier F trial set to resume. So the trial of a former paratrooper accused of the murder of two men on Bloody Sunday in Derry in 1972 is set to resume later this week. The non-jury trial at Belfast Crown Court will hear evidence from three men who survived the shootings, as well as civilian witnesses and former soldiers. It comes after Judge Patrick Lynch last Wednesday ruled the key hearsay evidence in the trial can be admitted as evidence in his trial. He granted an application by the prosecution to admit a number of statements made by other soldiers on the ground during the shootings on January the 30th, 1972, which the defence had argued were not reliable. And that was the call from the Bloody Sunday families that, you know, they wanted that evidence to be admitted into the trial, because if that wasn't admissible, that the trial wasn't going to proceed. So it's an important trial for the Bloody Sunday families, as well as, I think, Derry as a whole. Another very sad story, the Irish Daily Star. Gardaí suspect a dad strangled his six-year-old daughter to death before taking his own life in a horrific murder-suicide. Officers are set to launch a murder investigation after the horrified mother of the child discovered her and the father dead in the home in Heathfield Terrace near Finglas, North Dublin, on Saturday night. So this news began to emerge into the public domain yesterday. So the father, Christoph Dakowski, who was in his 30s and worked as a bus driver, was found by the stairs of the home, sources say. Locals have told how they heard the mother let out a horrific scream, called for Dublin Fire Brigade, ambulance crews and Gardaí, who rushed to the scene at around 8 p.m. Gardaí do not believe there was any break-in or third-party involvement. It's feared that the dad and his daughter, Julia Dakowska, lay dead for several hours before the mother arrived home. And it's just unimaginable to even comprehend what that scene would be like, you know, a mother returning home to that, and never mind the emergency services. I don't think they could ever be prepared for dealing with a situation like that. The Irish Daily Mail: Taoiseach, no border poll on United Ireland before 2030. Micheál Martin insists there won't be a border poll on a United Ireland before 2030. Speaking in New York, where he was attending United Nations high-level events, the Taoiseach said he believes the hard work of reconciliation has to happen before there can be a move to change the political institutions. He added, "My view is reconciliation of people and unity of people that will have ultimately different political manifestations." The Taoiseach criticised Sinn Féin for blowing hot and cold on a border poll without a blueprint for how it would happen. I do think there does need to be so much more work done in relation to a border poll. You know, different parties give out their, well, Sinn Féin have laid out how they would see a United Ireland playing out. But I suppose the conversation needs to be had. How do people, you know, how are they going to benefit economically and socially if there was a United Ireland? And to think that, you know, only in 5 years' time you could have a border poll and people might vote for United Ireland. But in my opinion, I think that is very soon. And, you know, there isn't enough evidence and there hasn't been enough, I don't think, consultation with people, you know, on the ground exactly. You know, people are busy working, people are busy doing different things, you know, caring for children. They don't, you know, maybe listen to the news and don't hear different viewpoints, but there's not, just doesn't seem to be enough, you know, how it's going to affect the everyday people if there was United Ireland, both in the north and in the south. Looking now to the Irish Times. Nature in Ireland is in a very poor state, with the country's economic growth achieved at the expense of the environment, an EU analysis has found. The State of Europe's Environment Report also criticised the poor quality of Ireland's natural waters, the country's growing waste volumes and its heavy reliance on fossil fuels. It says there is excessive car dependency despite some increase in public transport use, and agriculture and food production are too intensive and environmentally unsustainable in their current form. I don't know if, would you think that Ireland's environment is in a very poor condition? I think when you look particularly in Donegal, we have so many nature, you know, reserves, such as, you know, we have so many walks that are embedded. I recently did the Muckish Railway walk and it's beautiful. You know, you're in the middle of, you know, there's nobody around you. You're literally in the middle of nature is how I viewed it. You know, yes, you have the road out and you have the tarred paths, but, you know, you're so removed from town centres. Then you have Errigal, you have so many beaches, you have so many greenways now. And I do think that, you know, we make the most of our environment. And yes, there are issues in terms of water quality. You know, Kildaff recently had a boil water notice that was in place for quite a number of weeks there, and it was lifted, I think, last week. So there are issues with water quality. But I think overall, you know, I do think that nature is, you know, it is quite positive. And I think we do make the most of, like, you know, our natural, you know, as I mentioned, mountains, beaches, waterways. There's so many walks around lochs. Whenever you compare it to other European cities, if you go on holidays, it's hard to get a green space within walking distance of anywhere. Moving now to the Irish Sun, a great front page in the Irish Sun today. Shane Sessional is the headline there. So Victoria's Shane Lowry cried tears of triumph after delivering the Ryder Cup for Europe last night. The Offaly man, aged 38, sank the decisive putt on the 18th to claim a crucial half point. It put his team over the line after the host USA threatened an incredible comeback on the final day of the thrilling golf competition. After the putt went in at Bethpage Black in New York, as cries of ole, ole, ole rang out, emotional Lowry said, "That was the hardest couple of hours of my whole life, honestly. I just can't believe it. The Ryder Cup means everything to me. It's a dream come true." I didn't watch it yesterday, but I heard that it was very much edge of your seat stuff. If anybody watched it, get in touch. What did you think of it? There was so much, there was a kind of negative slant on it as well, with the jeering that went on towards Rory McIlroy, and, you know, it led to him cursing back at the crowd. And then, you know, there was the incident involving his wife. She had a drink, I think, threw over her. But I didn't see any of that within the live action. If you've seen it, let us know what you thought. Did you think that it kind of took away from the prestige of the event? I've only ever been to, you know, the Irish Open, and, you know, whenever the golfer goes to tee off or putt, the silence was palpable. So I suppose, you know, does this kind of take away from what the game is, the essence of it? Another huge sporting event took place then in Ireland, this time over the weekend. So more than 70,000 people descended on Dublin to see the Pittsburgh Steelers take on the Minnesota Vikings in Croke Park yesterday, with pomp, pageantry and a protest following American football across the Atlantic. Fans meant business, says the Irish Independent, as they made a beeline for GAA headquarters yesterday afternoon, forming long lines into the grounds where GAA fans prefer to be carried along by the crowd. Performers on stilts beckoned fans towards the Hogan stand, as many had glowing words to share about Irish hospitality, while others were using the game as an opportunity to make good on promises to connect with their ancestral roots. It was, I've seen a few clips from this, and given the photo in the Irish Independent as well, there's spectators arriving in full costume, and it was very American, which I suppose was to be expected, given that it was an American football game. And, you know, I think it's Lyra, is it you pronounce, or Lyra, performed the national anthem, and her dress was beautiful. It was American football inspired. And then you had Miles Smith as well during the halftime show giving a performance. So I suppose it was very Americanized, but, you know, that was to be expected. And it's great to see. I know it came at a huge cost, but it is good to see events like that happen in Ireland. Finally, for now, the Irish Mirror. A descendant of brewery tycoon Arthur Guinness claims a new Netflix series about her family makes them look like fools. Molly Guinness reckons show House of Guinness is full of mistakes. She also slammed the amount of swearing and the accent of James Norton, who plays Sean Rafferty. The great-great-great-granddaughter of Benjamin Guinness, Arthur's third son, fumed every episode starts with the Weasley old Netflix disclaimer, "This fiction is inspired by true stories, so it's art. I suppose I shouldn't be a bore." However, she says, "Yet the more I watched, the more indignant I became. It's been about a century since the death of my great-great-grandfather Edward and his brother Arthur, and they have had a good run since then, but it seems unjust to turn them into knaves and fools." I haven't finished this. I only started it last week, and I think it very much, I don't know if I would say it, maybe if it was my family, I would say that they come across as fools, but I think it represents the privilege they had at the time. You know, they were so ignorant to the realities of what was happening on the ground in Ireland at the time. In one case, a sister's travelling to Ashford Castle, and, you know, they have to get protection along the way because of, you know, the backlash towards them from people in the villages. And then she discovers, you know, the famine that took hold in the village and how, you know, so many children died. And she was shocked at this. And then even, yes, yesterday, it didn't happen yesterday, but yesterday I watched it in the episode. And one of the brothers, I can't remember which one, goes to Arthur, and he kind of makes a scene outside the front door, and Arthur says to him, "You need to keep it down because the neighbours will hear." And the other brother was quite shocked, as in, you know, neighbours. And then Arthur turned round and said, "Yeah, most people have neighbours, but to think that, you know, that's the way they live. They didn't know neighbours existed. You know, they didn't know what was going on." I just feel that they were so protected. Obviously, it's, you know, I don't know how much is true, but they were so protected by their privilege and the wealth that they were, you know, completely removed from reality on the ground. And I think that's, it's an insight into, you know, perhaps other people that lived in such a privileged position that, you know, they're then, once a father dies, they're left to deal with all this and they're just not equipped for it, that maybe, you know, they should have been exposed to this many years ago so that they wouldn't be in this position, and they were more in touch with people on the ground. Anyway, if you've got any views on any of those stories making the papers, make sure to get in touch with us.
Highland Radio Time Checks, brought to you by Airgrid, the operator and developer of Ireland's electricity grid. Airgrid, powering up communities, powering up Ireland. The time is...
The time is now almost 20 minutes past nine. Now, as I referenced during the review of the newspapers there, Kevin McCluskey has been named, sadly, as the fisherman whose body was recovered off the coast of Donegal. He went missing on Thursday evening when a fishing boat was discovered aground with its engine running. It's believed that the Killybegs native accidentally fell overboard. I'm joined now by the editor of the Fishing Daily, Oliver McBride. Good morning to you, Oliver. Can you hear me there okay, Oliver? I'm not sure if Oliver can hear me there at the minute. We are having issues with our online stream, so I don't know if that has fed into the issues with Zoom. But hopefully we'll get back to that because Oliver knew Kevin, so it'd be nice to get his view on it as well. And it is just very, very sad. A couple of your comments that have come in. I'm 57 years old and this is the first election that I will not vote in. I'm a strong believer in democracy and using your vote to make a change. But these three candidates are just not a choice. I don't think there seems to be much of an interest in the presidential election this time. Is it because, you know, Sinn Féin's back in Catherine Connolly and then we have the Fine Gael candidate and the Fianna Fáil candidate that people just think, you know, maybe it's another election that there's no... Catherine Connolly is an independent TD, but, you know, there's no independent candidate as such running that people kind of really aren't interested in that. Another comment, Greg, it's time all these world leaders stop bowing to Trump like all bullies. The more you give, the more they take. It's embarrassing to watch Starmer and other world powers licking his ass in case they say something wrong. Tell him to F off is the message and let him do his worst because he is going to do it anyway. Another listener says, I don't see why it is a problem putting up our flag anywhere in the Republic of Ireland. It's our flag. Why would anyone be offended? It's funny, we're having the conversation about flags there just before he came on air. And, you know, some people just are intimidated by flags. It doesn't matter what flag it is. You know, I was saying that sometimes you go to areas and, you know, maybe you're in a place where you don't know what the flag is, that sometimes, you know, it can be intimidating. You feel that, you know, maybe you're not welcome or you stand out like a sore thumb. But yes, everybody, you know, it does represent something to everybody. I'm joined now again by Oliver McBride. Good morning to you, Oliver.
Good morning, Michaela. How are you today?
Good, good. So, Oliver, editor of the Fishing Daily, we were just saying how Kevin McCluskey has been named as the fisherman whose body was sadly recovered off the coast of Donegal. Can you take us back to how events unfolded last week?
Well, unfortunately, there was a vessel spotted by a member of the public on the shore around the Mullamore area. And I just noticed that there was nobody on board. So it was at that stage then that an alert was sent to Malin Head, and the Malin Head Coast Guard Service then started to coordinate a search for the missing fisherman.
And then sadly...
So that was around Thursday.
Yeah, that was brought to an end then on Saturday.
That was brought to an end on Saturday. Yeah, we received the news on Saturday evening that the search had concluded, a 3-day search had concluded, and the Coast Guard had more or less notified us that there would be not continuing the search for the missing fisherman because they had found it.
And what do we know about Mr. McCluskey himself?
Well, I was very fortunate to interview him in 2017 when I was working as editor of the Skipper. And what I found was a man who was very, very passionate about his job. We sat for maybe 2 hours, just as the Americans say, shooting the breeze, talking about fishing. And, you know, he went through from his very beginnings with his uncle to the time that he graduated from the Fisheries College in Greencastle, to through his apprenticeship on boats in Killybegs, to the time that he bought his own boat, mm-hmm. and then he moved up to another boat, and so on and so forth, and to the time that he bought the boat that he was last fishing, the KMRK, and he was very enthused by that story and how he went to Iceland to see this boat and to get this boat built new and delivered to him in Ireland was meant so much to him.
Yeah. And I suppose it's a very difficult time for, obviously, Kevin's friends and family, but for the entire fishing sector here in Donegal, I presume, you know, being a fisherman, that everybody knew everybody and they looked out for each other on the water.
They do, but unfortunately, the number of fishermen that's out there at the moment is getting smaller. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot to do with government policy, a lot to do with what happened through Brexit. And a lot of fishermen leaving the industry because they've been driven out by poor prices, and they feel that they're not actually being listened to by the government. We just seen last week we had a group of three fishermen from the National Inshore Fishermen's Association and the Joint Fisheries Committee for Fisheries and Maritime Affairs in Dublin. And, you know, something that should have been highlighted on our national news gets totally ignored. You know, you're looking at people now having to fish on their own because there's no profitability in it for.
And is that the reality for most fishermen now, that they are on their own when they go out?
Unfortunately, for a lot of inshore fishermen, yes, it is the reality. Yes, the day-to-day operation is run by themselves. They have to find a market for their own fish. They have to do everything on their own, and it's not a highly profitable. It's not a highly profitable career. So, like, you know, fishermen at that end doesn't have the same representation, say, as the more richer, powerful organisations that have a bigger boat.
Yeah. And this obviously, you know, has serious safety concerns then, because should a fisherman that's out on the water on his own take sick for some reason, that, you know, he can't contact, for example, the Coast Guard, he can't make contact with anyone on land, they're on their own, and, you know, until they don't return to shore, nobody knows to provide them with help.
Well, this is part of the problem. Like, fishermen take every precaution they can in order to avoid accidents. And, like, at the moment, there's so much safety equipment and everything else on the boats. But you can't mitigate for everything. Unfortunately, accidents and incidents happen. And if you're on your own, you're in more danger of not getting aid or help as quick as what it could happen if you were fishing with somebody else on board the boat.
And do you see a way to improve this? I know you talked about there's so many, you know, the number of fishermen is getting smaller and there's so many people leaving the industry and seeking a different career. But do you see anything that could be done to improve safety?
Well, it's difficult to know. We have a lot of, over the past 20 years, safety on board boats has greatly increased, you know, the number of accidents has been greatly reduced. And there is a lot of good things coming down the line that could be of help to people. Like, you know, we're moving into a different world now with artificial intelligence and different things like that, which could provide maybe better safety vests or something like that there. So if a person did get ill and they couldn't reach the waylist, that they could actually maybe use an artificial intelligence could actually help them send out a signal without them having to do it themselves. So there's so many different things coming down the line, and I think within the next couple of years we'll see these changes.
Yeah, because obviously they are necessary, because this, you know, is the reality of the changes within the industry. So, you know, it does need to be adapted as well. And I suppose, you know, the government has a role to play in this, because the fishing industry is such a huge sector here in Donegal and across Ireland.
Yeah, well, we heard from the Fishermen Joint Committee saying that one job at sea and so it's 7 jobs on land.
Mm.
And in Cornwall, they did a study and they found that for every job at sea, it influenced 12 jobs on land.
Right.
So the economic knock-on from the fishing is very positive, but we seem to have come up against a wall in this country with the government who has actually narrowed down the variety of fishing activities that a small inshore fisherman can do.
Yeah.
And if there's a variety of activities that they can do, I think that it's a lot. First of all, it makes people, it makes it more interesting for the fishermen themselves,
mm-hmm.
and bringing more people into the industry. And it's also better for conservation of fish stocks. And over the years, we've seen the salmon fishing being taken away from the inshore fishermen, and that was due to pressure groups. We've seen the mackerel quota that they were entitled to reduced since 2012. Mm. We've seen the herring fishing ring fenced, and last year in 2024 there was no pollock fishing on the Irish coast, and that caused quite a few fishermen to have to leave the industry because they just couldn't afford to keep their boats going.
Mm.
And now you're looking at pressure groups like Fair Seas looking for marine protected areas. And the thing about a marine protected area is if you put a marine protected area somewhere, unfortunately, that affects the fishermen in that area. And because they're small boats, they can't move out of that area and go somewhere else to fish.
Mm, yeah.
So there's, you know, there's all these different pressures. And it's not making it look like a very attractive career.
No.
So, you know, there's such a thing as safety in numbers, and I think that applies to the industry as well. The more people that's in it, the better it is for issues, for things like development and safety and that.
Yeah, and, you know, we were talking, obviously, in relation to Kevin McCluskey and how, you know, he worked for quite a number of years, you know, began his career in the fishing industry, but that doesn't seem to be the case, that this generational pass down within the industry doesn't seem to happen as much anymore.
No, it doesn't. Well, you know, there's a lot more options out there for young people. Education has been opened up, you know, as we can see in Letterkenny and in Killybegs. The ATU is providing so many more options. When I left school, secondary school in 1993, you know, there wasn't as, there's only a fraction of the options that's available now. So young people have a greater choice. But also at the same time, we have a lot of young people who are very passionate about fishing.
Yeah.
But they're just finding it very hard to see where their place is in the future. And I can relate to that because in 1996, I was questioning where my place in the industry was.
Mm.
And, you know, for me, I couldn't see a long-term future, and I couldn't see myself owning a boat. And, you know, because it's just really, really expensive to try and get into the industry, or
yeah,
to step up in the industry to get your own boat and to move on from there. And any young person who's able to do that, I have to take my hat off to them and say fair dues.
Because I'm sure it's obviously quite an expense.
Yes, oh, it's hugely expensive. Like for if you're having to fish lobster pots or crab pots, I think it was a chat to a fisherman a few years ago, between the pot and the rope, it costs €100 a pot.
Just for one,
so,
yeah.
So, you know, you need to be fishing, and maybe in some people are fishing maybe in the range of 1,000 pots.
Mm.
So, you know, that's already a huge expense even before you put diesel into the boat to start fishing. So, yeah, that's very expensive. Boats now are getting more expensive to run because of the increasing price of fuel. Mm-hmm. And markets are very vulnerable as well because, first of all, after Brexit, and then because of the war in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the market that was in Asia has been flooded by Russian crab because more or less as a kickback to the sanctions that's been put on them by Europe.
Mm. Yeah, it just doesn't seem to, unfortunately, be an attractive career for many people. And it is sad. It's a sad reality, I suppose. But Oliver McBride, editor of The Fishing Daily, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Yes, thank you, Michaela. And just before we go, I just want to say I would like to pass my condolences to the family and friends and the community of Killybegs on the loss of Kevin.
Yeah.
And I'd also like to say that we really appreciate the work of the volunteers of the Irish Coast Guard, mm-hmm. and the RNLI, and when an incident like this here happens, you really see community come together, and you've seen that in Killybegs with so many boats taking part in the search for somebody from their own place.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
And we echo Oliver's comments there as well. And it was a very busy few days for the rescue services. In a separate incident, at around 2:30 p.m. on Thursday, the Killybegs Coast Guard was tasked by Malinhead Coast Guard to reports of a missing person at Malamore. After a short search, the missing person was located deceased. Killybegs Coast Guard have thanked the rescue woman, the National Ambulance Service and Garda Síochána, and locals who helped in this search. They have also expressed their condolences to the deceased person's family. So very busy few days, unfortunately, for the rescue services. And indeed, we're thinking on that person and Kevin McCluskey, the family and friends and colleagues of them as well. Now, welcome back to the 9 till noon show. It's Michaela Clark in this morning for Greg Hughes. And we have, thanks to Ash and Kelly, got our stream back up and running. So you can watch along on our social media channels as well as our website, highlandradio.com. I'm joined now on the line by Lorna Walsh. Good morning, Lorna.
Good morning, Michaela.
So, Lorna, I'm sure it's been a difficult few days. Your daughter has type 1 diabetes, and because she doesn't have an assigned SNA, she's been forced to leave school. What is the current situation with regards to that?
Well, the current situation is, last week, I got a phone call from Messino to say they would be coming out to assess the school within the next 2 weeks. And I told her 2 weeks was too long because mm-hmm. Alyssa was already out of school for a week. And I just find it's unfair with 2 weeks. It's not good enough. So she said she would speak to the principal and hopefully have it resolved within a week.
Mm-hmm.
So I said that was perfect, that was fine. Then the principal got in contact with me and said the only date she could come out is the 8th of October. So I'm in the situation now that a week and a half away.
Mm.
And that's just her to look around the school and that. So
yeah, it's obviously the reality is it would be longer than that then before Alyssa's allowed back to school.
Yeah, it's how long I'm going to have to wait after that for them to make a decision. Then if she gets approved it, or they would have to put out,
No, you're okay. They would have to put out kind of a tender, or they'd have to advertise it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And then you have to wait then for that length of time on when she go back. It could be November, which is so unfair.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, she's just starting off, you know, in her education. And, you know, it's so important at that stage to, you know, mix with the different children in her class. And she's had that and then been removed from it and having to go back into it now, it is far from ideal.
It is far from ideal. Like, I was told she wouldn't be made any difference for her diabetes. But it doesn't look that way. It looks like she's been ruled out because she has diabetes. Do you know, where she's missing what her friends are doing, what they're learning in class, to jump on, and then she's missed so many weeks of what they have learned to try and catch up with them. Now, she's a smart wee cookie. She probably could catch up with them.
Yeah, it's not the point, though, either, isn't it?
No. It's not the point, no. It's the fact that she's sitting here and the school is back to normal, should I say. Practically.
And how has it been? Have you had to try and homeschool her then yourself?
I have. Now, her teacher is brilliant. I asked if she could send home wee bits of work for her. And Alyssa loves getting the books home.
Yeah.
You know, to do the new, all the different things and that. So that's exactly what we've been doing. But it's not the same because she's not interacting with other people.
Yeah, and how does she feel herself?
She just keeps asking.
Yeah.
When can she go back? She just doesn't understand where the rest of them are going out to school in the morning and she's here in the house.
Yeah.
Do you know, I don't know. I feel like I'm at a loss.
I know. And, you know, Alyssa had that SNA when she was at preschool, didn't she? Was there any difficulty in securing that, or that was a given whenever she started preschool?
No, there was no insecurity. She was granted it straight away.
Yeah.
And her SNA was brilliant. She'd done all the training, all the courses, and she got to know Alyssa, so she knew if her behaviour was off or she just looked that wee bit different, she would say, oh, there's something off today with her. It's just to have that, you know, somebody that's going to get used to Alyssa and know her behaviours and
And it's so important with type 1 diabetes that, you know, she does need that immediate intervention when it's required.
Yes, because she can turn around and say, I don't feel well, or my sugar feels very high, or things like that. Or her SMA was able to spot it out straight away and manage to control it.
Yeah. So will there be training required for hopefully this new SNA?
Yeah.
So that could be, that could extend the period of time before they are in place as well, could it?
Well, I'm pretty sure there's ones out there would have training.
Already, yeah.
Already on it. Like her old SMA, she is willing to apply for the job.
Okay, that would be great, yeah.
That would be great because she knows her.
Yeah, and exactly.
She knows everything that's going on with her. Because the school had her and they funded her for the first 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And the school, which was great because I felt relaxed because she knew exactly what to do and work with Alyssa.
Absolutely, yeah.
But
and
they have now.
Yeah. And Lorna, now whenever this inspection is carried out and the recruitment process is completed and an SNA employed to support Alyssa, will this now be for the long term throughout the duration of her education, or is it something that every year or every so many years will have to be reviewed?
That's what I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know that. I would say throughout years it will get better, where she'll be able to tell you, well, I feel this way or I need this. Or she might need as much attention on it. But for now, she definitely needs
that constant monitoring. And it's just, you know, the unknown and, you know, thinking that it could be November now and we don't know what is to come between now and then. And just to think that, you know, as you said earlier, she's kind of being discriminated against because she has type 1 diabetes, that she's just been, you know, you've been told to remove her from education.
Yeah, that is 100% because no child should feel different. May they be type 1 or any other medical, or may they have ADHD, no matter what,
child
should feel different. And it just, it breaks my heart what she is made feel different for a medical condition she can't control.
And just to the fact that, you know, she was at school and then was removed, you know, she wasn't removed, you know, you were told to remove her. It's just crazy that, you know, that is a situation that you as a family have been left to deal with now.
That is it. They say a child shouldn't miss so many days of school, but in my situation, what am I to do?
Yeah.
Or she can't attend school because she has moved, got an SMA to support her.
And yeah, it's just crazy. And, you know, there is these proposed changes to the SNA guidelines, and we're already at this situation with yourself and Alyssa and God knows how many other families out there. And, you know, Donegal Deputy Pearce Doherty raised it in the Dáil last week, and the proposed changes could see a decrease in the number of children supported by SNAs. But, you know, there's a clear need that, suppose, SNA numbers need to be increased.
They definitely do. There is no shortage of SNAs out there. There is plenty of ones what's willing to go on. And if a child needs help, it needs help, no matter what the case may be. They shouldn't be decreasing it because it's putting more pressure on the schools.
Yeah, absolutely.
And on teachers, what is trying to give them the education what they need, not taking time out. They, if Alyssa was in the classroom and there was no SNA, well, the teacher would be closely monitoring her and not have the time to teach the class. Like, how does that work?
Yeah.
You know, it shouldn't work like that. Especially when there is so many SNAs out there what's willing to do the jobs, and it's the children then what's missing out.
And I suppose
because they're not getting the support.
Yeah, it is positive that, you know, this inspection is going to be carried out and hopefully an SNA recruited, you know, because the funding hopefully will be made available and that will be a positive outcome in terms of Alyssa. But it's just, you know, how many other children are going to be in this situation and having to be removed from school? Surely this funding should have been made available from the start of the year. It's just now that, you know, when the issue arises, you know, again, the government's being reactive rather than proactive in this situation.
Yes, I really think it should be mandatory.
Yeah.
For any child with any medical condition or any needs, where an SNA should be there to support.
Yeah.
Every school needs an SNA in each classroom.
Yeah, definitely.
They do, where they can't turn around and say, well, we can't fund this. There's plenty of funding out there that can support the schools. And support the children what needs it. And it's unfair what children have to go without the support, and they're struggling through the years of school.
Yeah.
And it makes more pressure on parents, where they're worrying, well, how's my child doing today in school? Is everything okay? Are they learning what they need to be? It's just, I don't know what way it's going for the support. It's not fair. It really is not fair.
Well, Lorna, thank you so much for joining us this morning and giving us that update in relation to Alyssa. Sadly, she's still out of school at the minute, but hopefully, you know, she shouldn't have to wait these coming weeks and months, but hopefully there will be a positive outcome. Thank you so much, Lorna.
Thank you, Michaela.
And we did get in touch with the department as well. So the Department of Education and Youth has said that special needs assistance play a central role in the successful inclusion of students with additional and significant care needs in schools. They help ensure that these students can access an education to enable them to achieve their best outcomes and reach their full potential. The number of SNAs employed across the education system has grown significantly, with more than 23,000 now in place, an increase of almost 7,000 posts, or 43% since 2020. And I suppose this is, if you were listening to our news bulletins last week or seeing the story on our website, this is the exact same response that was given to Donegal Deputy Pearse Doherty. But the statement goes on to say, in relation to this case, which is Alyssa, the NCSE has advised that they have been in close contact with the school concerned and will continue to work with the school and the family as required. It is a matter for the Board of Management to ensure that SNAs are in a position to effectively meet the care needs of students for whom SNA support has been allocated in the school. Where specific training is required, the Board of Management should liaise with the Health Service Executive in order to ensure that the HSE provides guidance and training that enables the SNA to meet the care needs of the pupil in an appropriate manner. It is a matter for individual school authorities to make such arrangements locally. Well, I suppose, you know, the appropriate SNA was in place for Alyssa in school to deal and monitor her type 1 diabetes. And it was just the fact that there was no funding in place to allow that SNA to remain in the role. But as Lorna was outlining there, an inspection is due to be carried out and a recruitment process will ensue then, but unfortunately that will take a number of weeks.
Highland Radio weather updates brought to you by McElhenney's. With new season styles arriving daily, discover the latest fashion, footwear and accessories for autumn in store or shop online at McElhenney's.com today.
Today's weather, any mist and fog will clear later this morning. Today will be mainly cloudy with scattered rain and drizzle. Highest temperatures of 14 to 16 degrees.